Welcome to Book of Boredom Podcast, Christmas edition, plus Alma Chapter 2, with a whole bunch of my friends, some I've never met in real life. Let's get around the room. We've got Dick, Gina.
Hello.
And Mr. Eric.
Hello.
And we've got Mike from work.
G'day, guys.
I love your accent. Michael's great. And we've got Sister Gigi.
Hello.
And we've got Sister Charity. She's back.
Hello.
Bettina told me this. Apparently, in Mormonism, Christ's birth occurred on April 6th. I've never heard that before. I did some research on this, and apparently not all elders agree with that date.
We all knew that Jesus was not born on December 25th. We knew in our religion that he was born sometime in April, but we didn't celebrate anything at that time of the year. In fact, nothing really was much different at Christmas. They didn't go all out. The place wasn't decorated like crazy. There were not people flying in on zip lines like these mega churches.
It's his birthday. Come on now.
Mormons didn't do any of that shit. It was 3 hours of boredom, just like every week. And we would sing Christmas songs. If Christmas landed on a Wednesday, there was no church. Because remember, we really didn't worship Jesus Christ.
Not Jesus.
We worshiped Joseph Smith.
But Jesus loves you.
And the way you know it's true is because April 6th, which is the day Jesus was born, was also the day that the Mormon church was organized.
I love Joseph's fairy tales.
Oh, Charity likes Joseph Smith. She would have fucked him. Who wouldn't have?
Oh, he's really creepy. I don't know. Maybe the portrait's not very flattering, but...
There's a reason he had so many wives. No, there's got to be something about him that made women want to just follow him into the woodshed.
So what you're pretty much saying is he's got a dick bigger than a donkey in the barn. Let's go check it out.
It must have been something. He repeated this over and over again with like how many other women? Like as soon as her husbands were out of town, he's like, I'm your new husband.
Oh, Joseph.
And they bought into it. Who is this Mike person that I've never met?
Mike's a pilot.
Oh, how fun.
But now he works at a call center with me. Tell us your religious background. Mike.
Yeah.
I grew up as a Jehovah's Witness.
Jehovah's Witness in Australia. There can't be a big population. What deconverted you?
Thinking.
Come on, there's got to be more, though, because you must have reached a certain age.
Yeah, because Gigi wanted to have sex. That's why she left.
Did you ever believe it?
No. I had no issue with that religion itself up until a certain point.
How old were you when you started to reach that?
I was probably about 6 or 7.
That young?
Having pretty early then, eh, Mike?
Yeah.
He's like, I reached an age of logic and determined that this was bullshit. So at 6 or 7, you're like, this isn't making sense to me?
Pretty much, yeah. But I was lucky.
How so?
Because of my dyslexia. It stopped me from reading all that much. You listen to stuff, don't get me wrong, but I'll tell you what, dyslexia, you pick up things that other people don't.
Like, I would be frustrated, like, why am I reading this again?
Yeah, I couldn't read a school, let alone there. Crikey. Growing up, knocking on people's doors, knowing that there's people out there that just don't give a fuck about you or anybody else. I opened my eyes quite early.
What's the worst thing that happened to you when you knocked on a door? What is your trauma?
Now, we were in Kedron, and we knocked on this door, and this young lady, she would have been about 18, 19, tight hot pants, tight white shirt, and I've just looked at her and my jaw hit the ground. I literally had two hands, one on his shoulder, and I got ripped back behind the other two people I was with. They both said, we're sorry, we'll leave.
Wow.
Yeah, we need to do something about this before he goes to another door.
Yeah, you didn't have any magic underwear, did you, Mike, in the JWs?
And not that they would consider, no.
What, did you have your own special pet?
Everybody does.
Everybody does.
You've got your lucky socks and you've got your lucky drops.
Charity, I can't remember what your background is on religion. Can you remind me?
Pentecostal Christian. Both my parents came from Catholicism, so they still had superstitious kind of beliefs, but they would define themselves as Pentecostal Christians or born-again Christians.
My least favorite type of Christian to some extent. I mean, especially here in America because they're ruining everything.
I'm not a fan of them either. That's why I don't go to church anymore.
Your parents still go?
Yeah, there are a lot of things my parents do that I don't like.
Have they softened up over the years, though?
No! They don't say anything about my piercings. I just rather not see them if I'm face to face with them.
Yeah, I mean, it's best avoided directly.
Outside of that and my sexuality, I think we don't really talk about it. I am seeing a man now, though, so it kind of helps cover it up a bit.
That's right. Your mom would be very happy about you seeing a man now.
Well, he's a white man, so she's not that happy.
Oh, you don't make everyone happy.
She's a Filipino man. I don't know why.
Aw. So wait, how do we know Ed?
Tell us how I met you, Ed. Go for it.
Oh, it was on Reddit. Yeah, I guess I was the first person to award patients an award when Reddit used to give free coins and whatnot. And so I got a thank you back and then DM'd back and forth and decided to talk, and patients invited me on the podcast.
So you're trolling the Mormon subreddit?
I was on the ex-Mormon subreddit. I'm a never-Mormon who got hurt by Mormonism quite bad.
Really? Tell me about that.
I was married to a person who was born in the covenant, but was out of the church for 15 years. Since like teenage years, because according to the person's explanation, she was raped, although I want to be careful about it, but she may have been just discovering her sexuality as a young lady. But whichever happened, she confessed to the bishop about having been intimate with the guy. And I guess she said that it was a rape, but the bishop said it's your fault and was scolded. And then I don't know how, but she thought that she was kicked out. She went on to live her life 15 years outside of the church. And then after we got married, giving birth, her sister had her come to church, to sacrament meeting.
Yeah.
And a young lady at the ward said, oh, you have a baby. How about I bring you a dinner? How about tonight? So basically, she got smitten and went back in.
Love bombed.
And I had no idea. I was respectful of religion, but I was born and raised in Estonia as part of the Soviet Union. And so I had no concept of religion whatsoever, especially something like Mormonism. I've come to U.S. in 95 for college, studied and then worked and all that jazz. I'm realizing more and more that any kind of Soviet-related life experience, I can only talk about my own experiences. I mean, Soviet Union was vast. It reached 300 million.
Yeah.
I think something to add to your story to help give context.
Yeah.
You met your ex-wife in Trinidad, Washington, but shortly after the child was born, you moved to Utah.
Mm.
Yeah.
And you didn't have a support network in Utah except for her family, which was very, very Mormon. And all of her sphere was Mormon.
That is so tough. You are set up for failure. They would have wanted you to convert immediately.
My interpretation is that once she got her endowment, about a year after she returned to the church, she needed me to convert because she needs a temple marriage, because that's the ticket to celestial kingdom.
Yeah, like the highest level.
But yeah, there was a mission director of the ward who served his mission in Ukraine, so he spoke Russian.
Oh, okay.
That's my mother tongue. It's an extra angle where maybe they were hoping that that would draw me in.
Did they get you baptized or did you resist it?
No, I never converted.
Wow, that's hard.
That's how the marriage fell apart.
It's sad that any woman would give up a marriage for this fake story. It's the community to some extent. You are a new mom and you need help with dinners. Women are bringing you dinners.
Right.
You are a new mom and you're struggling and you need to find babysitters. Everybody's a babysitter. But it requires so much of you in exchange.
Yeah.
Not just you. It needs your husband, 10% of your money, and it needs you to believe in a bunch of bullshit. I'm impressed that she resisted it because it's very hard to do with that amount of pressure.
So, Ed, Christmas time growing up in the Soviet Union.
We didn't have Christmas as such.
Oh my God, I knew it was going to be dark.
It's not as dark. We did have some Christmas traditions rolled into the New Year celebration. So kids still received presents under a Christmas tree, but it was called the New Year tree. So it's a Fraser fir and we decorated it, sparkling and what have you. And you open the gifts on January 1st.
But did you have like a Santa?
There is Grandfather Frost, Ded Moroz.
And he kidnaps the bad kids.
Turn him into coal.
Grandfather Frost wasn't actually invented by the Soviets. It goes back to pre-revolutionary traditions.
Everybody got presents. Nobody got like punched in the nuts.
I think you meant a lump of coal.
I don't know what they do in Soviet Russia. Like you could say anything and I'd believe. You could be like, he rides a grizzly bear. He comes down and he like punches kids in the nuts when they're bad. He puts them in a sack and he kidnaps them. He puts them in forced slave labor. And that's how you get elves.
How do you think all these things were achieved in the Soviet Union? Gulag, right?
Nothing grizzly.
Terry, tell us your experiences with Christmas.
Usually the worship leaders, like the singers and the band, would get together with the Sunday school and some other volunteers, and they would put together some sort of Christmas play. One year they wanted me to join and play the goth, and then I was just like, it's a little on the news.
You were going to be the bad guy.
I was going to be the bad guy, and I was dressed already. They were like, well, this will save us on costuming.
So how horrible is that?
It was very rude.
They're like, we need somebody to play the goth whore. You already looked the part, so why don't you just come and be you?
The way they phrased it, actually, is I was supposed to play one of the sinners.
That's traumatic.
A sinner. And I'm like, girl, I met you here on a Friday. What do you mean, sinner? Come on, dude.
They're like, you have a scarlet A.
I was like, I have, you know that I've kept it in my pants.
What made you leave if you were so goody-goody on the inside and so baddy-baddy on the outside?
Well, it was all very toxic. I would have panic attacks and people would tell me that I'm not believing hard enough and that I'm not close enough to Jesus. And
could you imagine if I said to you, you are not believing in the tooth fairy enough.
That's why you have cavities.
How dare you not believe my way?
I also felt it was just kind of culty. I mean, that's what it is, really.
Culty.
It's also a lot of socializing and connections for some reason, or at least that's what I felt anyway.
Money.
When you have very famous televangelist Taffy and Creflo with the last name Dollar, it tells you something.
Creflo is sort of like cryptic for credit flow.
Oh, yeah.
Gigi, when I was living in Ukraine, this was about 25 years ago, I had two English language channels on the television. One was BBC World and the other was Trinity Broadcasting.
No.
So I watched a lot of televangelism because it was the only channel I had.
That's torture. As a Mormon, I would be like, oh, how disgusting. They're begging for money. Like, we don't pass around a bucket. We don't talk about that in our church. Except we do. We say, you're giving tithing.
And that's prosperity gospel, right? You get blessings for the tithing. Where, how does it work in other churches? When you donate for the church to run, right? But not for blessings.
Yeah. They had us watch their propaganda movies. Can't remember which prophet. He was like, we're in a drought. The reason we're not getting rain is we're not giving our 10%. So give your fucking money. And then, of course, the movie shows raining and people are like, oh, praise God. The prophet was true. Like, it stuck with me. Like, that's how powerful it was. Like, I don't remember a lot of things from my childhood, but I remember that bit about the tithing.
And if you want to give more, you just go now to the Mormon vending machines that they have in the holiday season.
That's right. You can buy a cow.
You can buy a cup, so you put your money into this vending machine for charity for the Mormon church, although there's fine print that says, you know, they can use the money at their discretion for what they want.
Yeah. You can buy a goat for a village and wherever.
People are like buying them as Christmas gifts to each other.
It has the machine in the name. It's Giving Machine or something like that. And it has the slogan, light the world on it.
I'm a village that needs a goat. Divchina, so can you do some research on how Light the World could provide me with a female one that will give me milk?
Everybody, I put in the chat about where you can find your closest vending machine, and there's one right there in Brisbane. It looks like it'll give you a picture of a goat symbolizing the money that you donated that you can hang on your wall year long.
And I need one for a sacrifice next week.
You get a goat. You get a goat. You get a goat.
I keep squeezing, but there's no milk coming out.
Just keep stoking. You'll get milk in a minute, Paisley.
Is there anything about people's Christmas traditions that I haven't heard yet?
I grew up a liberal German Catholic. We started with St. Nicholas Day, which is December 6th, where there'd be a knock on the window and you go outside and there'd be a box of fruits and nuts.
He just knocks on the window? Fuck the chimney, man. Like, how lazy is this guy?
Santa came down the chimney like 2 weeks later.
There's two of them.
Yeah.
Where does St. Nick live? Does he live with Mrs. Claus?
What's Nick got going on?
I went to Catholic school and we had the Christmas pageants every year. Each grade sang songs and the parents would come and listen. It was like an evening activity. So it's a dress rehearsal. I'm in third grade and we're singing that song, Do You See What I See? Some kind of stomach flu was going around. And at the end of the song, there were 16 beats that you had to hold that last note for.
Oh my God.
Lo and behold, somebody pukes all over the altar. And whenever I hear that song, I just have this bile taste in my mouth.
Oh no.
I do not regret not having children, mainly because I don't have to go and do all that dumb shit.
All right, shall we read some of this stupid book?
Where are we? Are all the what?
It's Alma 2. Do you want to read the intro before we all get totally sidetracked?
Amlici seeks to be king and is rejected by the voice of the people. His followers make him king. The Amlicites make war on the Nephites and are defeated. The Lamanites and Amlicites join forces and are defeated. Alma says Amlici. About 87 BC. Yeah, I completely don't understand what I'm reading. It's disjointed.
And that's just the intro other people write for him.
Oh, it's a summary.
Summary of what somebody else thinks he said.
And it came to pass, in the commencement of the fifth year of their reign, there began to be a contention among the people. For a certain man, being called Amlici, he being a very cunning man, yeah, a wise man, as to the wisdom of the world, he being after the order of the man that slew Gideon by the sword, who was executed according to the law. Now this Amlici had, by his cunning, drawn away much people after him, even so much that they began to be very powerful, and they began to endeavor to establish Amlici to be a king over the people.
Ooh.
Now, this alarming to the people of the church, and also to all those who had not been drawn away after the persuasions of Amlici, for they knew that according to their law that such things must be established by the voice of the people.
Okay, I'll try to do it in my local dialect. Therefore, if it were possible that Amlici should gain the voice of the people, he, being a wicked man, would deprive them of the right and the privileges of the church. For it was his intent to destroy the church of God. And then it came to pass that the people assembled themselves together throughout all the land.
Sounds like Singlish.
Every man, according to his mind, whether it be for or against Amlici, in separate bodies,
what?
Having much dispute and wonderful contentions one with another.
Wait, what?
Yeah, what is he talking about?
Separate bodies, having much dispute and wonderful contentions. Like, what's happening? Are they having sex?
Kind of seductive.
Right?
I think that's my new pickup line. I'd like to have much dispute and wonderful contentions with you.
It worked on me.
I like to have contentions with my customers sometimes. I just push their buttons and see what happens.
God.
And thus they did assemble themselves together to cast in their voices concerning the matter. And they were laid before the judges.
Let's do charity next.
So I had to do a voice?
Do American. Do Southern California.
Whatever I think of Southern California. Well, yeah, I can't do a woman's voice, but I can do the pastor's voice at my old church. I think he was
so appropriate.
I don't know. Maybe I can try that.
Let's hear it.
And it came to pass that the voice of the people came against Amlici, and he was not made king over the people. Now this did cause much joy. The hearts of those were against him, but Amlici did not stir those who were in favor to anger against those who were not in his favor. I'm somehow going into the southern.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
And it came to pass that they gathered themselves and did not consecrate. Amlici to be their king.
Charity, you've inspired me. I'm going to do the next three. Like my old boss, a southern attorney from Houston. Now, when Amlici was made king over them, he commanded them that they should take up arms against their brethren. And this he did that he might subject them to him.
Oh.
Now, the people of Amlici were distinguished by the name of Amlici, being called Amlicitites.
Amlicites?
It looks like an antibiotic.
It has to rhyme with Nephites because Joseph Smith loved to rhyme. And the remainder were called Nephites, or the people of God. Therefore, the people of the Nephites were aware of the intent of the Amlicites. And therefore, they did prepare to meet them. Yea, yeah. They did arm themselves with swords, and with scimitars, and with bows, and with arrows,
and cigarettes.
Evil, sneaky tobacco. And with stones, and with slings, and with all manner of weapons of war of every kind.
I feel like he could have said that last bit instead of all the weapons he listed earlier.
He's just so verbose.
I never thought of Ross's armament.
Yeah.
Can you all see Mike's kitter? He's stroking his pussy there. That's a very cute kitter.
Mike, you and your pussy are up next.
Give us your best Paul Hogan.
I'm not a good impersonator, that's for sure.
No, you can just do you.
Okay, thank you. And thus they were prepared to meet the Amlicites at the time of their coming.
Ask your doctor if Amlicite is good for you.
Amlicite.
And they were appointed captains and higher captains and chief captains according to their numbers.
All the captains.
Oh, it sounds like ancient.
Too many captains spoil the plane.
I know, with their laws and rules. And it came to pass that Amlici did arm his men with all manner of weapons of war of every kind. And he also appointed rulers and leaders over the people to lead them into war against their brethren. And it came to pass that the... Yeah, whatever. Those people passed on the hill, which was east of the river Sidon, which ran by the land of Zarahemla.
Zarahemla!
Is that a drinking game scene? And there they began to make war with the Nephilites. Nephites.
The Nephites.
I like the idea of a drinking game, Mike. Like, each word we can't pronounce, we take a drink.
It's hard to read better, I will.
There might have been some new thing pieces added to the stories.
And then we went to the pub, and the loaves and fishes there were out.
Michael, what was really popular in the United States about 30, 40 years ago was a yellow book with red writing called My Book of Bible Stories. And it was one that was distributed by Jehovah's Witnesses, and they'd go door to door selling these books. And everybody had a copy of them because every good Christian parent would buy My Book of Bible Stories for their children.
My book of ways to convince you.
My first book of horse shit.
Are you familiar with My Book of Bible Stories?
Yeah, there's many versions, though. That's the thing.
And Mike couldn't read any of it because, fortunately, he had dyslexia. It probably improved the story.
Well, I remember the picture of Jesus on the cross, and his arms were like this instead of like this.
Oh.
As far as Jehovah's Witnesses are concerned, he didn't get buried on a cross. He was buried on a stake.
Straight up the ass.
But either way, we got hammered first.
Couldn't we all?
That was the party with his 11 mates beforehand.
You're right.
The Mormons had very specific understandings about how Jesus was hanged, and that's how they got secret handshakes that people get when they go for their endowment. Ed, I'm dying to know, like, what your ex-wife thought about when she got out of the endowments and she learned all the secret handshakes.
Did she ever talk about it, Ed?
No, not at all.
Because you're not supposed to, are you?
That's the whole thing. I had no idea. She went to the temple with a friend of hers that she went to college with. I thought it's just like going to a cathedral. I didn't comprehend the significance of that.
She didn't tell you about the magical underwear and everything?
That's a funny one. I was still back in State Washington and I said, oh, hey, that's funny. Google is giving me an advertisement that says Mormon underwear. And she just laughed.
Yeah. All right, who's up next?
It's me! Now, Alma, being the chief judge and the governor of the people of Nephi, therefore, he went up with his people, yeah. I like the way Ed did that before. With his captains and chief captains. Oh, that's right, lots of captains, like Anne said.
Yeah.
Yay, at the head of his armies against the Amlicites, ask your doctor if Amlicites good for you, to battle. And they began to slay the Amlicites upon the hill east of Sidon. And the Amlicites, ask your doctor, did contend with the Nephilites. I like your version of that one, Mike. With great strength, insomuch that many of the Nephites did fall before the Amlicites. Wow, what a long way of saying that. Yeah, okay, so they had a war and many fell before the Amlicites.
Did they fall on their knees?
Absolutely. They begged for it. They were like, oh, run through me, come on.
All right, where are we? 18, I think?
It's Mr. Head.
Nevertheless, the Lord did strengthen the hand of the Nephites.
They had a very strong hand.
That they slew the Amlicites with great slaughter, that they began to flee before them. And it came to pass that the Nephites did pursue the Amlicites all that day, and did slay them with much slaughter. Insomuch that there were slain of the Amlicites 12,530 and two souls.
Two souls?
And there were slain of the Nephites 6,560 and two souls.
Two souls?
He's exceeded his daily allowance of the word slain in various conjugations.
He would have fit in at work when the kids are there.
Slay.
Slay.
Spider, I'll stop.
Boots. And it came to pass that when Alma could pursue the Amlicites no longer, he caused that his people should pitch their tents in the valley of Gideon, the valley being called after the Gideon who was slain by the name of Nehor with the sword. And in his valley, the Nephites did pitch their tents for the night.
Are these euphemisms?
Yes.
I love this. They slew the Amlicites with great slaughter.
Yeah. Who says that?
Someone with that up a sword?
Great slaughter. Great slaughter. He slew them with great slaughter. That's going to burn a lot of calories.
Look, if you go out on the town to slay with great slaughter, just make sure you bring prophylactics, okay?
I think Charity is next.
Yeah, go Charity.
Okay, let's slay. Alma sends spies to follow the remnants of the Amlicites that he might know of their plans and their plots, whereby he might guard himself against them and he might preserve his people from being destroyed.
In the bedroom.
So now those whom he sent out to watch the camp of the Amlicites were called Zerum, Amnor, and Manti, and Limhur. These were they who went out with their men to watch the camp of the Amlicites. So if I understand rightly, the Amlicites pitched a tent, and then these others went out to spy on them?
They like to watch.
Sounds like the rally.
That's right. These names are just ridiculous.
Yeah. Zerum, Amnor, Manti, and Limhur.
Oh, dear. Okay, keep reading, Devchina.
And it came to pass on the morrow, they returned to the camp of the Nephites in great haste, being greatly astonished and struck with much fear, saying, behold, we followed the camp of the Amlicites. And to our great astonishment, in the land of Minyan, above the land of Zarahemla, in the course of the land of Nephi,
in the box beside the fridge,
we saw a numerous host of the Lamanites, and behold, the Amlicites have joined them in these pitched tents.
Literally sounds like the valley.
And there upon their brethren in the land, they're fleeing before them with their flocks and their wives and their children towards our city. And except we make haste, they obtain possessions of our city, and our fathers and our wives and our children be slain.
Oh, dear.
I don't understand any of that last part, but I can make something up. I guess that's what the prophets do.
Like, who's fleeing where? Why aren't they already with their brethren? Oh, is it a civil war?
I think it is. And he's really worried about their wives' fathers getting killed.
So the Nephites are fleeing before this camp of antibiotic names.
Yeah, it explains it in the next paragraph. Do you want to go to 26?
Go, Mike.
And it came to pass that the people of
Nephi
took their tents and departed out of the valley of Gideon towards their city, which was the city of Zarahelma.
Zarahelma?
Where's your helmet? And behold, as they were crossing the river Sidon,
sitting down,
the Lamanites and the Amlicites, Amlicites.
They're going to come upon them.
As it were, as the
Stenies
came upon them to destroy them. Moses was there. It's going to be a white Christmas for you this year.
As the sands of the sea came upon them to destroy them. See how sexy that is? Like Joseph Smith had it going on.
Like sand through the hourglass. These are the days
of our lives. So bad.
Oh, God. Where did we get up to?
I think it's my turn.
I think so.
Nevertheless, the Nephites, being strengthened by the hand of the Lord, having prayed mightily to him that he would deliver them out of the hands of their enemies.
Oh, from hand to hand.
Therefore the Lord did hear their cries, and did strengthen them.
There's too much hand stuff in this.
There's a lot of hand jobs going on here. And the Lamanites and the Emily seats did fall before them, but Alma fought with Amalici with the sword face to face, and they did contend mightily with another.
Kind of hard to go by yourself.
And it came to pass that Alma, being a man, of God, being exercised with much faith, cried, saying, Lord,
Jesus,
have mercy and spare my life, that I may be an instrument in thy hands to save and preserve this people.
Now when Alma had said these words, he contended again with Amalici. Ask a doctor if Amalici is right to you. And he was strengthened in so much that he slew Amalici with his sword. And he also contended with the king of the Lamanites. But the king of the Lamanites fled back from before Alma and sent his guards to contend with Alma, because they had an open relationship. Verse 33. But Alma, with his guards, contended with the guards of the king of the Lamanites until he slew and drove them back. Wow, that is the worst storytelling ever. That is just so clumsy.
Remember, though, patience, he was getting his instruction from a stone and a hat. So the grammar kind of just goes by the wayside.
He was getting his instructions from the stones in his pants.
That too.
Verse 34. Take it away, Ed.
And thus he cleared the ground, or rather the bank, which was on the west of the river Sidon, throwing the bodies of the Lamanites who had been slain into the waters of Sidon, that thereby his people might have room to cross and contend with the Lamanites and the Amalecites on the west side of the river Sidon.
Is he saying there's so many bodies, it's dry land? Is that what they're saying?
Pretty much.
And yet we've not found any evidence of any of this. You'd think there would be bones from an archaeological perspective. Like,
yeah.
But nope, it didn't happen.
No, they would have been washed away. Come on.
No longer in the sedimentary evidence.
That river's been back and forth for generations.
And it came to pass that when they had all crossed the river Sidon, that the Lamanites and the Amalecites began to flee before them. Notwithstanding, they were so numerous that they could not be numbered.
And how did he know that they were so numerous if he couldn't number them?
There was more than 21.
That's right.
I'll count them as high as I can go.
Toes, fingers. What do I do after I get to 20?
23 max, that's it for me.
And they fled before the Nephites towards the wilderness, which was west and north, away beyond the borders of the land. And the Nephites did pursue them with their might, and they did slay them.
Awesome. Charity, can you take the last two verses?
Yay! They were met on every hand and slain and driven until they were scattered on the west and on the north until they had reached the wilderness, which was called the Paramount, and it was part of the wilderness, which was infested by wild and ravenous beasts. And it came to pass that many died in the wilderness of their wounds and were devoured by those beasts and also the vultures of the air, and their bones have been found and have been heaped up on the earth. That's so brutal.
I don't know if these places even exist.
Look, if Joseph says it's true.
I still reckon this should have been read by Kermit the Frog's voice.
Dad, let me ask you, is your ex still 100% in the church?
She is.
How many kids did you guys have?
Two. But she went on to have another one and was trying for a fourth, like at age 45 or 46.
How often do you get to see your children?
I don't.
That's fucked.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry. Someday those kids, they're going to have questions about what the fuck that church is about. It's like just time and patience before that happens. My sister, she was never so Mormon. There were times when she would ask her husband, like, do you want to get out of this? But he was always so into it. But the minute he died, she was like, this is bullshit. It's not doing me any fucking good. They're not helping me. They're not paying my rent. My husband is dead, and they don't even give a shit about anything going on in these four walls. She realized very quickly that the value of religion was nothing.
Yeah.
Your ex-wife is living in a crazy false world.
Oh, yeah.
It's sad. So sorry.
There's a lot of indoctrination that's more than what I experienced in the later stages of Soviet Union growing up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand it, how somebody is so immersed.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a whole worldview. The whole life is informed by this structure.
my brother was married to a woman and they were both Mormon at the time. And I remember them coming to my house after they had just had like their second baby. Then I sat on the patio over candlelight and I asked his wife, do you really believe in your heart that like Joseph Smith dug up some plates and translated them with a thing called the Urim and Thummim? And I wanted to like shake her because my brother was entrapped by her and I knew that he wasn't really as Mormon as she was.
What'd she say?
She looked me in the eye and she put on that sweet voice that Mormon women have. Oh, yes. Of course I believe this.
Of course.
And I'm like, how stupid are you? But she was like in this other world when there was no talking to her. And rather than offend her to the extent that maybe I'd never see my brother again, you know, you leave it alone. But It is very strange how much they believe when they do.
The cognitive mind, I'm guessing, is turned off. So when you ask, do you really believe that? And it's like, somehow the person just can't even process that.
Jehovah's Witnesses are the same thing. Like, do you have any family that is still that into this religion?
Yeah, my mom.
Really?
That's a story in itself. My mom's Munchausen's and Munchausen's by proxy.
Oh, God.
And she does it to get herself better in the religion itself. She is on Endone and she washes that down with vodka.
Holy crap.
Which makes her extremely violent.
And not really there.
That's right. Doesn't feel a thing. Now, this is a person that put me through medical mutilation just to get attention. I had my appendix taken out when there was no need.
Holy shit.
She must have really enjoyed that attention.
So your mom got the idea that you had appendicitis and forced someone to take out your appendix.
It was our family doctor.
Wait, what? So how many unnecessary procedures did you have?
Just the one. We caught on to it straight after that because the doctor came back to me after the surgery and begged for my forgiveness.
Oh, my God.
I was a young fella. One was in the nursing industry, which is where she gets a doctor shopping with.
Oh, my God.
When you get constantly poked in one spot in the stomach, it starts hurting. And so after a good 2 hours of that, you get taken to the doctor and the doctor goes, does this hurt? You go, yeah. And it's like, okay, off we go.
Wow.
And you got in there and pull out a perfectly healthy fucking appendix.
That's horrible.
It makes me wonder if people that are more prone to being in a cult are more prone to doing that kind of thing.
It's been lovely to talk to you all. Merry Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
Lovely meeting you all.
Make merry, get a little drunk, have fun.